Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 143 of D&D Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Buffmopper. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
I am glad I finished yawning before you introduced me.
It's one of those nights.
Yeah, a little tired. Been very busy, week or so, and will continue to be throughout the rest of the year. So we're just going to keep on trucking through. But
this month has been a year.
Yes, it has. This day has been a year. Anyways, we're here. We're here to talk about some D&D. I'm doing Awake. And how are you today?
I am also doing Awake.
Hey, it's a start, right?
Yeah, it's a start. We got a lot of fun stuff to talk about tonight. First, we're going to jump into our news, though. Just a few quick things. First off, Heroes of the Borderlands, the brand new starter set, is now out. You can grab it in box set and in digital on D&D Beyond. It's got a very large adventure. They say 40 to 60 hours of play, featuring combat, exploration, and role play. They've got a quick start guide, a play guide, adventure booklets. They've got four classes, cleric, rogue, wizard, fighter, 200 different game cards for background, species, spells, equipment, magic items, monsters, a bunch of another 200 tokens, 18 different maps that you can use, a combat tracker, a set of 11 dice in the physical edition. It's retails for about $50. It is definitely on the higher end of starter sets, but it does come with a lot of stuff. And if reviews are anything to go by, as they've been coming out, it seems like this is pretty effective in the content they have and its ability to kind of teach stuff. So I will likely pick up the box set at some point so that I can run like starter adventures and stuff just because of all the tools and whatnot in it at my local game store. Mm-hmm. But it is out. It's out now. It looks pretty good and has been getting very good reviews.
Yeah, no, everything that's great. And I mean, I don't know if it's because forever ago I bought like the ultimate bundle of, I don't know, content or whatever from D&D Beyond, but I'm seeing that if you get the ultimate bundle in from D&D Beyond, it's just $5 more than the physical version. So if you want the digital version as well, at least for me, it's $54.99. Otherwise, I think it's $64.98 is what it says. So as it is, you know what? It looks great. I'm probably going to bundle it at some point to get both because I like having everything digitally since I play online. But you know, this is one of those sets where it's like, hey, having all the extra, all the accoutrement, if you will, is definitely a plus. And especially if you're getting new people into it or, you know, kind of teaching how to play, it's a really good starter set to go with from everything that we've seen on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very cool to have. And the first starter set that is officially 2024 edition as well.
Yep. Definitely.
Also, if you were unaware, the D&D Beyond Maps has gone free to use. If you are a master tier subscriber, you also get to upload and scale your own maps. You get to add homebrew monsters. They give you like 10 gig of storage for custom map uploads and such. But otherwise, all the features are completely free to use, and you can use any content that you have already bought on there that is integrated. The tokens, the maps, the adventures, etc. It's honestly pretty good. I would put it up there with most of the 2D VTTs at this point. It's not quite as feature rich as something like Foundry or Roll20 yet, but as far as the integration is very nice. It's getting more every month, and as something that's easy to set up, I've definitely used it. I can definitely recommend it. And they even have kind of their roadmap that they've put up. And it's got, they recently added like the stickers for, you know, adding in little accessories to maps. They added the animated map support. So you can upload those files and get the cool animated maps that you can make with what is Dungeon Alchemist, stuff like that. You can make animated maps with that, which is super cool. And then apparently throughout the rest of the year, they're going to be adding in 3D dice to maps. They'll be adding the ability for DMs to reveal custom art and handouts to players, which for something like Curse of Strahd, very, very handy and helpful. As someone who has played a decent bit of that, there is a lot of those for that campaign. A campaign console to create and manage your campaign directly in maps, and a rules assistant for quick rules questions and answers, probably a little like chatbot type thing. So that actually could be really handy.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah,
I'm always wary about anything AI, but you know what? Whatever. The thing that
I hate the buzzword, but you know, if it's just if you're talking just like a look up this rule, give me this thing back, and it tells me, you know,
as long as
something like that might be useful.
As long as you know it's not sentient and understand how it actually works, not a bad thing.
Yeah.
I do find it absolutely wonderful that it is still in beta. Even though it's been in beta for years, and this is just, you know, more extra added stuff that they're doing, so hey, great. You know,
technically the encounter builder is still in beta.
Yeah, and it doesn't even support 2024 anymore, so that beta is probably not going to ever get updated again. That's a guess anyway.
It's a bit annoying. I like it outside of the maps.
Yeah. Nope. I agree with you. And that reminds me, I can get rid of a bunch of encounters that I have yet to need. So yeah, I should get rid of that. Anyways.
Just remind you, encounter cleanup.
Exactly. You know, that's why I do this show. It reminds me to do cleanup on D&D Beyond. So
that's right. That's right. It. Also, about a week ago, we got a really good blog article updating the Unearthed Arcana, the Arcane subclasses. So they posted kind of an update and said some of them are returning after tweaks and feedback from the surveys that people have been submitting. So that's super cool. Right now, they brought back the Arcane Archer, the Tattooed Warrior, Monk, the Conjurer Wizard, the Enchanter Wizard, the Necromancer Wizard, and the Transmuter Wizard. So those are the six that they decided to kind of bring back. And I actually love this format because they give a little talk about each of them and what they're changing and why.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you.
Which I really, really like.
And the best part is that they completely say player feedback has showed this, or the feedback has shown an increase in this and everything like that. And I love the fact that they're definitely pointing towards the fact that, hey, we're listening to what you're doing and we're, you know, they want to make everybody happy, of course, but they're really kind of going with, like, you know, seeing different interpretations or the way things need to go. Like the big thing that you and I talked about, especially with the Conjurer, is that it's moving stuff around as opposed to like summoning things. Well, specifically called out, and this is the feedback shown an increase in interest for summoning, which is like, that's kind of what we were talking about. And obviously you and I weren't the only ones who felt this, because if they got enough feedback to really change it, then hey, you know, other people have that same feeling and really kind of felt that way. And it just goes to show that the fact that they're calling on different feedback and stuff means that they're listening, they're paying attention. And it's so much more important now more than ever to really put your feedback out there, to give your thoughts, give your ideas. And, you know, as we've said many times before, make sure it's constructive, make sure it is, you know, concise and thorough at the same time, so that's, you know, you're able to get your point across without, I hate this, it sucks, this is the worst plan ever, I think that all of you need to take a long walk off a short pier because you're bad at game design, this is what I would do instead. It's like, no, you don't do stuff like that. You just say, I feel that as a conjurer, I should be creating and summoning things as opposed to teleporting around the field a whole lot. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. They still don't have minor conjuration back.
No.
Which, come on, guys.
It's minor. So it's so minor.
It's minor and it's super cool and super creative. Just love it. But yeah, so they talked about the Arcane Archer. The player feedback pointed that they enjoyed the streamlining of the Arcane Shot die, but they didn't find the die upgrades exciting. So they added some new features. The Tattooed Warrior Monk. They basically said, sorry, we failed.
Yeah. Which was this nice.
This one is just like we didn't do great. So they kind of reworked most of it. So it sounds like at least from the comments, people like it a little more, but there's still some work to do.
Yeah.
And the Conjurer.
I have to point out really quick, the Tattooed Warrior Monk, now at a higher level, you can get a beholder tattoo and shoot lasers from your eyes.
That's an improvement.
Yeah. I think it's pretty cool.
Granted, that's an improvement.
It's four times at the same person. Not like a beholder where it's random, but you're still shooting lasers from your eyes. And I think that's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. We talked about the Conjurer Wizard, how they added a little more focus on the summoning spells and making summon creatures a little more durable. They talked about how the Enchanter, they took big swings, but feedback showed it strayed too far from what players wanted for the subclass. Mm-hmm. So they kind of pulled it back a little bit and returned several features from 2014. To tweak and address the feedback, which I think in this case is good. When you're redoing subclasses, you first have to ask yourselves, was this broken?
Yeah. What worked?
Was this not fun? Yeah. And most of the wizard ones, especially, I think had a fairly strong theme. Mm-hmm. And we're in decent places. I love that they take swings and new ideas, and hopefully they won't throw those out. They'll just put them in a different subclass.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Right. Because there's nothing wrong with those types of things. There's just certain things where people have the expectation of these eight original wizard, you know, subclasses. There's really not a super good reason to full on mechanically change them unless they were just bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I don't think any of them were really just bad.
No, I mean, except for the Conjurer being just crazy weird and how they changed that direction. But it still had a purpose and a goal with how they designed it. It just didn't fit with that version.
Yeah. And they talked about that with the Necromancer Wizard too. In the previous version, we moved away from animating the dead, but players made it clear that controlling hordes of undead is the fantasy they want from the subclass. So the update provides the Necromancer with multiple ways to summon undead creatures. And to keep the Necromancer's undead potent at higher levels, they learn how to use them as an expendable resource. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like that is what you would expect from that subclass. Just improve or tweak or fix what was there. Mm-hmm. If the subclass was one that existed already.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, we did see this with some of the 2024 subclasses that came, you know, just with the update as well, how they had some that, you know, worked, some that didn't, and completely redid, you know, previous subclasses like the Beastmaster Hunter. We'll talk, you
like
know,
that one was that yeah. one was bad.
Yes.
It makes sense to do a more thorough update to something like that.
Compared to like the Arcane Trickster Rogue, there weren't a ton of changes in that because it was mostly successful for what they had. So
yeah. And so, then finally
summoning hordes of undead.
Yeah,
that's what a necromancer is. Just simple as that.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And then finally the Transmuter Wizard is the sixth one. Still has an emphasis on the Transmuter Stone, but now also has shape-shifting abilities. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
The durability option of the Transmuter Stone was consistently cited as the best, and picking another option created the feeling of playing wrong. That's obviously never something you want to happen. You should never feel bad for passing on a certain choice or whatever. So they've updated the feature, making the durability option part of the stone by default. That's a good, so I have to point out, this is great design. If there's an option that literally everyone picks over a bunch of the other options you have, sometimes the best solution is just bake that in to the base and then provide the other options.
Exactly. Exactly. We saw that in World of Warcraft many times where it's like, everybody chooses this talent. Let's just give it to them.
Yeah. Then maybe that talent should be baseline. Like it just, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So,
and
I love seeing this.
Yeah. What they did with that. I mean, the transmuter stone is like a huge part of being the transmutation wizard. And yeah, anytime you don't pick the durability, it just didn't seem. Yeah, exactly. As I said, it's like, well, you know, I could die instantly, or I have this durability option because I'm a wizard. Let's maybe do that one instead. So yeah, it definitely works a lot better just baked in with an added bonus on top. I love that they did that.
Yep. So we'll have this linked in the show notes, dndiscussions.com. There's a link in the article to the newly updated playtest material as well. So definitely check that out. The survey is already out for it. So if you want to give feedback and let them know to add minor conjuration back, you should definitely do that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whatever else.
Yeah. I mean, if you just want to submit one that just says add minor conjuration and then like, that's it. Or say, I really think this is part of the subclass that really calls out to me and other conjuration wizards.
Yeah, I have a special place in my heart. My first wizard, character.
It's essentially, wizard. You know, prestidigitation, but with conjuration.
Yeah. It's very fun. Very fun. So yeah, go check that out. Give feedback if you have the time and the energy for it, because it is certainly helpful. And as shown here, it does make a difference. So, okay, moving on. Our main topic of tonight, we are going to talk a little bit about deific interactions. We've talked way, way back. I had to look this up. I think it was like episode 22 or something like that. We talked about deities and pantheons and such, but we wanted to dive in a little more and like drill down a little more specifically to deific interactions and what that might look like in your world. I was thinking about this a lot because I've been reading through Brandon Sanderson's Stormlight Archive. And as those books go on, there are deific encounters and these beings of immense power that have a lot of impact on the world. And sometimes you get these really cool chapters, like written from the god's point of view, which I always find super fascinating as kind of just an overarching thing in the larger story, seeing like their perspective, their much, you know, the not omnipresence, but multi-present things, the larger ability for attention, the power and the limitations potentially of what they can do and can't do. So I thought it would be really interesting. And Ben, I know you've been dealing with some of this kind of deity interaction stuff in your campaign as well. So I thought for this episode, we'd take some time and kind of talk about that for your game, if deities are a prominent presence or you want them to be kind of a more prominent presence, especially if you have like a paladin or a cleric that is worshiping or interacting with a god, or even maybe a warlock that is interacting with a higher power. So Ben, we obviously know a little bit about what's going on in your campaign from just you filling us in at the end of every episode, but talk us through some of the like DFIC interactions that you've done, what your thought process is, and what are some of the ways you go about it? Maybe even pitfalls to make sure that you keep things in check.
Yeah. Well, one word is all I live by, and that's smite. The gods just want to destroy. No, I'm kidding. I mean, not the ones that my party has, you know, interacted with. You know, the thing is that I kind of, like a lot of my campaign, I just kind of fell into a lot of it. We have a cleric, we have a paladin. So obviously there's, you know, some sort of religion, you know, worship and stuff involved with them. But my cleric did a good job of kind of, you know, looking into his deity beforehand and kind of gave me the information. I was like, hey, I'm a cleric of Corallon. This is, here's the info I found on. I'm like, great. Cause you know, it's one that you might not fully hear in a lot of the Forgotten Realms stuff, or, you know, if you've read any of the books or anything that's, you know, non actually like campaign setting stuff or whatever. So, you know, I'm like, okay, cool. Kind of went with that. He ended up finding, you know, this artifact weapon stuff, and it started, you know, kind of unlocking, and he became, you know, that the chosen champion of Corallon in the storyline. And as the, you know, everything kind of started, you know, it was very, you know, kind of far. It's like, oh, you get like some warm feelings. You get, you know, like you feel the presence and like, you know, you're blessed and, you know, that sort of stuff. And then as the campaign kind of went further on, as he, you know, showed more devotion and stuff, I'm just like, okay, well, you know what? We're going to open this up more because of the RP that's happening. Plus the things that are happening with the world, the story that was progressing from that point and becoming more and more involved with, you know, the gods, the whole lore that I kind of came up with everything. And, you know, barred bits from here and there and everything like that. And then, you know, finally there was like an actual talking to interaction. And I'm like, this is kind of cool. I'm enjoying this, you know, having a lot of fun. You know, I'm not, you know, being, I'm the god of the world and stuff like that, but, you know, just, you know, giving guidance, giving reassurance and stuff, how I pictured this deity would kind of work with, you know, with this character. And then we started moving into the party members are becoming, you know, champions for different gods because of this conflict of like good versus evil gods and, you know, them trying to break through the barrier to come back to the material plane and things like that. And so I'm like, okay, well now I'm starting to look at not only the information that I got from my cleric, but I believe my paladin was the next one. Cause I'm like, you know, another holy character, I'm going to go ahead and jump there. And she was a paladin of Bahamut, which I'm like, great. But here's the thing, and something that I think the most important thing that you can do is realize that just like all your NPCs are different, they all have different motivations, they all have different drives. The gods are just really powerful NPCs. So they're going to all have their own personalities, their own versions, you know, how they talk to the players, how they view them, how they look at them, how they see the world and everything like that. It's just a souped up NPC for the most part. And then kind of based on that is how I move forward with, you know, I've got a homebrew goddess that is, you know, like championing my bard, and, you know, trying to find like what she would stand for that, you know, kind of fit in with the bard's, you know, actions, what they do and everything. And kind of, you know, playing around with that, looking at it and realizing that these are going to be so much more part of the story. You know, I had to give that one a voice. I had to figure out how they interact, what they hold dear and what they would see as, you know, like kind of praise and worship and things like that. Because not every god in, well, my pantheon at least, you know, wants like the devotion of nightly prayers and things like that. You know, some of them want it through actions and how they interact with the world, or, you know, just this and that and everything else that's kind of, you know, happening and stuff. And it was kind of neat to come to some of those conclusions on how it worked out and also how they communicated. I've had times where, you know, there's just straight up, you know, face to face with Bahamut. I had the Paladin have a vision of this giant platinum dragon talking to them, you know, when they got their artifact. Recently I had their, you know, like kind of material plane avatar just kind of bump into them and, you know, give a little guidance here and there. You know, it's just, you know, realizing that at least in my world, the gods have been banished from the material plane. So they have to find ways to, you know, kind of communicate and stuff. There's a crack in that shell. And so they're able to kind of get in more, but they don't just like show up and be like, dude, what's up? So yeah, it's been a challenge, and it has been fun just kind of figuring all that out as, you know, we've been going through and exploring more of the world.
That's really cool. I like that. I like that a lot. And I like the progression of interaction. Yeah. I think is a really good takeaway from something like this, where it starts off small with the feelings, then maybe, you know, escalates a little bit to signs and wonders, and maybe, you know, whispers.
Yeah, dreams and were a big part.
Dreams, yeah. And then maybe eventually, you know, face to face, like an avatar coalesces for this. And so I absolutely love the medium of storytelling. And I don't remember if it was me and you who were talking about this a little while ago, or if I was talking to somebody else about it, how the medium, the different mediums have their own strengths and weaknesses.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the weaknesses, if you can call it that, of like TTRPGs is not being able to show the contextual perspective.
Yeah.
Of like non-party members in a lot of ways, right? Because I don't want to necessarily just pull back and then just narrate for an hour, or talk to myself for an hour, where it's somewhere on the other side of the world where these characters wouldn't even know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Whereas like, animation is a great example of it. And recently, like the Critical Role animated shows, with the shows, they're able to do so much more that they couldn't do at the table. So like having scenes with, say, Silas and Delilah Briarwood, mm-hmm, without the characters present at the table, that would be incredibly hard to do. It might be very jarring. It might be very spoilery. But it's, you know, that somewhere in there, that conversation probably, or some form of it, probably happened in Matt's head. And yeah. So it's not something that he could really do at the table, but in a different medium where there are no, I guess, quote unquote, main characters, or we don't have to stay with the main characters all the time. You can do those jumps and you can see what these other people are up to. They even talked about it with the new Mighty Nein that's coming out in a month and a half or so, in that they're going to be focusing some on Essek. Essek doesn't show up for a while. You heard about some of his past, that he was kind of a bad dude, right? But mm-hmm, you never see it. So now we might get to see it away from the, you know, main characters. And so one thing to think about as a DM is, even though you can't necessarily really play those out super well at the table or at least not in any amount that you could in another media like animation or another media like just a book, right? That you're reading that hops around from perspective to perspective. It really is a great exercise to off sessions be thinking about those out of focus scenes. Like sometimes while I'm just sitting around writing notes or whatever, sometimes I'm just playing scenes in my head that are happening elsewhere that I consider, I guess, canon, right, to my world, but none of the players will ever see that scene, and maybe they'll never even hear about it, right? But it is contextual to the world, and it makes a lot of sense as a piece of the story. So it's really something to think about. So just to kind of tie this back to deific interactions, sometimes I imagine the gods just like talking to maybe a servant, maybe commanding them to go do something. Maybe I look at it from the gods' perspective as they're watching their champion do this and that, as they're plotting. Because remember, these are very powerful beings who have a much bigger view of everything. And potentially a very different perspective of everything than our players have. And so it's really interesting to get in those shoes and think about that larger scale of things and then bring that back down to how you interact with the player or players specifically.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as I said, I've got, you know, my players are becoming champions. Well, there's also bad guy champions too. So in order to kind of help keep that world lived in, they're doing stuff too. And where are they getting direction? How are they getting, you know, their orders? You know, they're not just out there, you know, clowning around. It's like, oh, I'm the champion of Loth here. Cool. I'm going to collect spiders. You know, it's like, no, there's literal things that are happening in the world that are being affected. And I love the fact that you kind of pointed out that, yeah, the gods will have a different perspective and different things. In a previous episode somewhere, I'm not even going to try and guess. We talked about how elves, you know, are a long lived, species, you know, so they look upon like, you know, humanity as, okay, they're just like a flashbang in the pot. You know, they are trying to get as much done in their puny little lives while we can just, you know, like start a fire over here and let it burn and fester and grow and do great things while they're just like pop and it's done. Well, these are beings who are so much more long lived than that, who have, you know, different ideas of morality, different ideas of sentience, different goals, different, you know, I can't think of the best word other than things that they're known for, things that, you know, like that they're renown. Fans of renown. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's always like, oh, I'm, you know, Grimash, the god of war, you know, what is their ultimate goal? Why are they known as that? What are they trying to do? And then based on that kind of, you know, filter down to what would those who worship that god be like? What would they want to do? Are they trying to, you know, be in the image of that god? And if so, what does that mean? You know, one of the great things is that, you know, Wizards of the Coast, other things, just the world, you know, that we live in, there are all these different, you know, like deities that are out there that you can kind of pull from, create from, or, you know, just kind of use to populate your pantheon. And, you know, there's a god of something, of whatever you want, somewhere out there. And if there's not, make it yourself and then kind of build upon that sort of flair and flavor that they're going for. You know, Muradin, the you know, god of creation, is one about, you know, crafting and making all these wonderful things and stuff. Well, again, dwarves are kind of known for their stonework and their building and their metalsmith and everything. It fits with that sort of, you know, deity and how it works. So how are they going to communicate? How are they going to want to spread that word? And again, have that sort of, you know, worship that goes along with it. And, you know, if you don't really want to follow like the Forgotten Realms pantheon, there's, you know, Dragonlance. If you don't want that, there's Egyptian gods. Heck, if you want to have Moon Knight in your game, you can have Khonshu as one of the gods, and Moon Knight can be a paladin of Khonshu or something, you know, like there's tons of different ways that you can kind of go with it.
Yeah. Norse, Greek. I mean, there is a literal Greek like setting.
Yeah. Mythos, right?
In D&D. Yeah.
Yeah. In +5 to hit.
Theros.
Yeah.
Theros.
Yeah. In +5 to hit, my character Caladan worships Freya. He's not from around here, you know. He has a god from a different pantheon from somewhere else. You know, you can pull from anywhere. You can have someone who you know, calls a god in this land by a different name. Look at Greek versus Roman gods. They have, you know, gods that are, you know, representative of the same thing, call them different things. Are they the same? Are they different? Are they fighting over control of that? I mean, there's so many different ways that you can kind of play around with this and mess around with it and have that communication going from, you know, the gods themselves through their priesthood or clerics or paladins or whatever. Or you can have people who misread a translation somewhere who are completely worshiping something wrong. And maybe the god is trying to punish them for it, but they think that they're doing the right thing. You know, there's a bunch of different ways that you can kind of look at it and play with it. And it's kind of a cool thing. I've been enjoying just, you know, figuring stuff out and like what their purpose is and what they're trying to do and what they're trying to accomplish. And you can base things off of the, you know, the alignment stuff, how some gods are, you know, lawful good, some are, you know, chaotic neutral, you know, whatever. You can go off of that. Or you know what? You can just take all that, throw it out the window, and do what you want with it and have them kind of act how you want. Because again, you're a DM here. You can do what you want.
Yeah. And obviously with all this stuff, you can go as abstract or as specific as you want. One of the really cool things that you can do that I do sometimes is you can almost take your game, move it up a level, and play a single player tabletop RPG at the same time that your main game is going on. I've done this. I won't say I've done this extensively, right? Because this is it because it hasn't really necessarily needed to come into play yet. But sometimes I do step up a level and go, okay, what are the gods up to? What are they trying to do? What are their motivations? Like, is one going after others? Like, are any of the ones that are in any way related to my characters, what are they doing right now? What are they trying to accomplish right now? Do they need the characters' help to try and accomplish these things? Or is it some other abstract thing? So I've always thought, like I said, I don't do it often, but it is kind of fun every once in a while to step up to that level and think about your world, especially if it's homebrew or something, on a grander scale. But like Ben said, there's obviously pantheons included in things like the Forgotten Realms and Dragonlance and such. But it's fun to kind of step up a little bit and think on a grander scale. What are the divine powers up to? What are they doing? Are they just lazing around, like collecting prayers and souls? Or are they moving? Are they trying to accomplish things? Are they trying to accomplish things through other people? Are they giving pieces of their power away? What is it mean to be a god in this world? Can they be dethroned? Can others rise up? Can some fall? It's really interesting to think of that, because every once in a while you'll get that player who's just like, what's your goal, Mike? Mike's like, I want to be a god. And you're just like, oh, well, I haven't thought about how that would even work. I haven't thought about how that happened in the first place. Let me get back to you.
Yeah.
But that is a thing. That is a very normal, like, fantasy type trope. That is, at least it can be very interesting, like the path to divinity. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is something that is worth, especially if you do have any sort of deity type focus in your game, it's worth giving some thought to.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's, you kind of even opened up a new topic with that, with, you know, the path to becoming a deity. It all starts with defining what is a deity. If you have enough, you know, mortal souls worship you, does that just automatically put you in that place? Like, is it based on a power like that? Is it some sort of magical ritual that you've done to, you know, break your mortal shackles? You know, some might say that, you know, anyone who goes and becomes a lich, their ultimate goal was to become a deity, but they went about it the only way that they knew, and that was just essentially immortality versus the actual, you know, celestial shipness.
Untethered power.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of different ways to kind of, you know, take a step and move forward that way. And I saw something online somewhere that was just, I mean, I'm going to get this wrong because it was years ago, but it was like an intriguing idea. And I think it was like there was a warlock who their patron was themselves, and it was based all on belief in spreading the word of their own power to other people. And that belief caused them to have more powers. It was a really interesting concept that I'm like, huh, okay, I can see that. And you know, the power of mind, the power of worship, like basically deifying this person as their own patron. It was, I'm pretty sure it was that, or it was a cleric of someone like, no, I think it was a different story of a cleric who created a false god. And by preaching to others, that belief created those powers in them. So yeah, a couple different ways of going that. That is just intriguing to me, but, yeah, it just the pathway, defining what it is and moving forward also helps with, you know, tying it all back. The communication of the gods. Like, if you're trying to become one, how are you communicating to get the roadmap? You know, are the other gods and deities going to be like cool with another one sharing their space? Is it something that they're going to fight against and stop if that is your ultimate goal? Is that actually a, you know, noble good pursuit versus an evil one? You know, that opens up the doorway to a bunch of different types of interactions just with the world versus, you know, the pantheon itself.
Ben, are you saying with great power comes great responsibility?
I mean, yeah, but then we have to define what that responsibility is.
Mm. And again, that goes back to perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the perspective you're looking at? From your perspective, this thing might be moral, but that perspective might not be shared by everybody.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a perfect example of why the alignment system works with gods as well. You know, you look at Bahamut versus some other, you know, like chaotic, you know, good god. They're going to have very differing opinions on, you know, justice specifically, but, you know, on just other things in the world, like what's good, what's appropriate, you know, what needs to happen. And if they're ruling the world that you're in, there's going to be some fighting there too, which opens up, you know, more communication, more questing, more story, depending on how far and how deep you kind of want to go to it. You know, is the celestial plane like one realm? Do they each have their own little like pockets and corners that they rule? Like if you have an actual pantheon, are they all sitting at the table together, like placing bets on what your player characters are going to be doing? You know,
or maybe do they not talk ever?
Yeah.
Do they all just kind of do their own thing and there's very little interaction
between
these?
That is very possible. Or there might not even be any interaction at all with the material plane. You know, there could be all this worship. You could introduce an entirely different faction to the whole thing. That is, I mean, the best way to put it is like the atheists or something, but you know, there could be people who are going around discrediting and stuff. Maybe there are those who want to, you know, I don't know the best way. What do you call it when you undeify something and make them mortal again? You know, like maybe that's their goal and they're trying to, you know, routinely go through and destroy. Maybe you have granted Thor Love and Thunder wasn't the best for it, but the comic series it was kind of based on was good. Maybe you have a Gore the God Killer going around killing gods in turn of the pantheon. And, you know, your players are getting screams from the heavens needing help or, you know, hearing them die. Maybe parts of the stars are just collapsing and disappearing in the night because parts of the pantheon are going away or something. You know, there's endless possibilities with this.
One thing that has always been rattling around in the back of my mind, and I don't know how it would work or if it would even work well. I've always thought it would be really interesting to start a game where all the players are gods.
Yeah.
Then through some happenstance, and even for several sessions, as things happen, and then through some happenstance, stop being gods. And the entirety of the campaign is them questing to get their power back. I've always thought that would be a really, really interesting, or at least has the potential to be a very, very interesting story to tell.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, it's a transformative tale of a fall from power, not necessarily grace, but a fall from power. And, you know, having that initial drive to get it back. But who knows if that's going to continue to be the drive as they're playing through and learning things from their new perspective of things.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting. Like, what would a god do with at least maybe not the awareness, not the power, but maybe even some of the knowledge still thrust into a weak mortal form?
Yeah. Also, what happens
intriguing.
From being omnipotent to suddenly you're cut off from everything and you just you have that history and knowledge, but you don't know anything going forward.
Yeah. Or the I can't be in multiple places at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I can't just look in over there to see what's going on.
Yeah, I can't split my attention between several different places.
Oh, what's this weird feeling I have in my stomach? Oh, I'm hungry for the first time.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a really interesting idea.
Well, if you ever DM mind, that
it's
game,
really,
I will play it.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is a very interesting, intriguing idea. And maybe at some point I'll explore it more. But again, that would be a really cool way to show your players what's happening on a higher level. And then putting them down into the world.
Especially if only some of the gods fell. Like, your players are the only ones who fell. The rest of them are still up there. So at that point, what the heck?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that so, opens up many possibilities for communication with deities.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pulling it back.
Yeah. So we rambled a little bit. Hopefully that was interesting. Hopefully that was informative. Hopefully you got some ideas, because that's really the point, is to spur creativity and spur ideas. So, hey, do you have any stories of DFIC interactions in your game as either the DM or the player? We'd love to hear about them. That stuff is super interesting. So make sure you hit us up on Blue Sky, send us an email. Ben, I'll tell you all the places. Hit us up on Discord. Love getting new people into the Discord and having conversations like these. So definitely check those places out. So let's wrap up this discussion, Ben. Let's start heading towards the end of our episode. First, though, I want to do a few community shout outs. I know we talked last episode a little bit about Critical Role Campaign 4. We're both very excited for it. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to a little watch party at my local game shop.
Oh, fun.
So that'll be a ton of fun. Watch it with, you know, other like-minded people. Enjoy the probably 4 or 5 hour premiere. Who knows? Who knows?
It's Brennan. Knows? It'll be 20 minutes, you know, simple as that. Yeah.
D20 episode will likely not be.
No.
But there was a great interview with the Dungeon Craft channel, just with Matt and Travis. And they talked a lot of the stuff with D&D, with Daggerheart, stuff about the new show. No, they didn't get paid to do D&D.
No, they don't have writers.
No, they don't have writers. Why they're doing 2024, you know, that type of thing. It's a very interesting interview. So we'll link that in the show notes at dndiscussions.com. If you're a Critical Role fan and you're interested. Secondly, you don't have to be a Critical Role fan for this. You just have to be a fan of feeding people.
Yeah.
A huge chunk of the tabletop RPG community has come together, but this has been spearheaded by D&D Shorts, very big D&D creator on YouTube, but put together a big initiative called Power Word Meal, Save Lives with the Tabletop RPG Community. And they partnered with the UN World Food Program, Share the Meal, and you can go, you can donate meals to this initiative and then potentially win cool prizes that have been donated by people and creators from all over the tabletop RPG community, from physical products to digital products. Each meal you donate becomes basically a raffle ticket that you can submit and have a chance to win one or more of hundreds of different prizes. So very, very cool initiative. I love to see it. Feeding people is awesome.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who need food right now. So this is a super, super cool initiative. And if you give anything, you even get a cool little PDF adventure that has a new species. And this is for both D&D and Pathfinder.
Yep.
Because Paizo got in on this, Roll20 got in on this. And so it's a little adventure. The adventure comes with information to run it for both 5e and Pathfinder. Comes with the new species for 5e and Pathfinder. And information on how to enter the raffles and the giveaways. So just a really cool initiative I saw come up. I supported it. I think it's very much worth doing. So we will have a link to that as well.
One thing that I do want to just point out really quick is that you do need to say that you consent to receive emails from Share the Meal in order to get the PDF bundle. Just they call it out, but since you mentioned it, just wanted to make sure that we toss that out there so that you do know that that is required to get that. But I mean, donate what you can if you can, because it's a very good cause.
Very good cause. All right. So with that, we will head into the final portion of our show, the kind of what we are doing in our own games. Personally, we had a double session and a break because of travel and some vacations. So we will start back up with my campaign this week. So I have not gotten to play anything new yet. But Ben, have you met since we last talked?
No. So this section is going to be super short.
Real short.
Yeah, we're playing this week as well. So next episode, we will be able to tell you what's going on.
Yeah. life happens.
Yes. Yes, sometimes. It does.
Sometimes it does. And that's okay. The September, October period tends to be very busy.
And don't forget December.
Any of us. Oh God. Yeah. It's all coming. Yes. So I'm hoping to get a few more sessions in before the end of the year. I usually like to take the last few weeks of December/January off just to kind of recharge the creative batteries. Probably be a little less this year because I had our big summer hiatus before we jumped back in, and I'm really excited just to continue the story. There's lots of really cool stuff going on, but next episode we'll have more to report back on.
Yeah, definitely.
But with that, Ben, I think we can call that a show. Why don't you tell everybody where we can be reached or chatted with?
You bet. Well, you know, if there is a home base for D&D discussion stuff that you're looking for, that place would be dndiscussions.com. There we have a link to all of our socials, as well as every single episode that we have ever recorded and put out. Not that there's any episodes that we have recorded that we haven't put out, but, you know, if we did, they'd live there too. Anyways, but yeah, check out dndiscussions.com. There you can find links to our Blue Sky accounts, which for the show is at dndiscussions. For Ryan is at tbkzord. For me, it is at Ben Bumhofer, as well as a link to our Discord server. That's right. Hop in, join, have fun. We have a lot of good discussions going on. We have memes being shared. We have people talking about their stories from their sessions. We have people asking questions about, you know, running things, what they would do in certain situations, asking for tips. Everybody's, you know, kind of jumping in, having good discussion about it. I mean, heck, the show is called D&D Discussions. Why wouldn't we have a Discord where people can discuss? It's the best place to go. Other than that, you can always, you know, email us. You can send us an email to dndiscussions@gmail.com. If you want to have, you know, more of a private interaction, you know, asking questions or, you know, giving show topic ideas or something like that. You know, no one else is going to see that except for me and Ryan. Whereas on Discord or Blue Sky, you know, it's public, but, you know, again, all of our fans and people who are supporting us are pretty cool and nice. So yeah, you're always welcome. That being said, if you want to listen to me playing some Dungeons and Dragons, you can check out +5 to Hit. Mentioned it previously. I am a really, I think, cool and fun barbarian named Caladan. We just had an episode come out today. So, or maybe yesterday or today, whatever. Doesn't matter. It's now episode 8, I believe. So check that out. This show though, D&D Discussions, again, dndiscussions.com. You can find us on all of your podcast players of choice. And with that, I just want to say thank you to everybody who's listened, who's supported, who's, you know, said hi. We appreciate it. We appreciate you. You're doing great out there. Just keep it up. Ryan, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for this episode and all the fun deity talk. That was pretty great, actually.
Yeah.
I got some ideas.
I love when you just get ideas from your own topics.
Yeah.
As you go.
I mean,
it's the best. Honestly, guys, that's the reason we do this show.
It is.
It's just like putting it out is just a side thing. We just do it to give ourselves time to brainstorm.
Yeah. I mean, we come up with the topics like, hey, what can we talk about with this? This. And then usually by the end of the episode, I'm like, oh, that's really cool. I'm going to have to save that for my next campaign or try to work it in here or something. And then hope that my players who do listen to the show don't pick up on the fact that I'm getting ideas from the show as we're recording. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. But anyways, Ryan, thank you very much. Everybody, thank you very much for listening. And until next time, roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.